It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
Welcome back to another episode of The Nonprofits, the show where we discuss news and topics of the day from a skeptical and humanist perspective. My name is Malty, and today we will be discussing the Catholic Diocese wanting to be a friend of the court in an Idaho abortion bill lawsuit. Planned Parenthood claimed the bill to be unconstitutional. The pastor of First United Methodist wants his parishioners to give up whiteness for Lent. We have a cautionary tale from the Gospel Coalition about the evils of multi-level marketing. But there is some good news. MLMs are shrinking. And we'll end up with some good old Christian National Bullpucky from Ali Alexander on Alex Jones's InfoWars. So that being said, let me introduce our panel we have today. On my far, I don't know if it's left or right, but on the other end from me is Cynthia McDonald. Hello, Cynthia. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Malty. And it's your far left. I know I make that mistake all the time.
All right. Thank you. We have our low poly version of Teo El Ateo here for hello, Teo. How you doing?
Hi, Malty. Despite my pixelated fear of today, I'm very happy and overly excited to be here. So thank you for inviting me once again.
And a special guest, we have Emma Thorne. Emma, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah. So you're a commentary YouTuber. You do consumer protection, feminism, and atheist commentary on commentary videos on other people's work. Is that mostly what I'd be seeing on your channel?
Yeah, that's essentially what you can expect from me. Similar conversations to what we're going to talk about here tonight.
Very good. All right. So let me get the some of the boilerplate out of the way. This show is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the separation of religion and government and promoting positive atheism. As with all of our shows, links to today's topics and the news we discussed are available in the descriptions below. Remember, if you want to come back, so you can go check those out, come back, and you can join us then for it again. I apologize. You can see that on our nonprofit's Facebook fan page. All those links will be posted on Friday's nights. So that being said, let's get into it. Segment one, we're going to have Mateo lead us off on this. Can you tell us a little bit about the Catholic Church in Idaho?
Oh, yeah. It had to be the Catholic Church, La Bendita Iglesia Católica. So, okay, what is going on? The Catholic Church wants to intervene in abortion. You know, the same Catholic Church that stopped people from wearing condoms in Africa turning AIDS into a pandemic. The same Catholic Church that has turned talking about sex into a taboo, so parents don't educate their children in sexual education, creating a kind of pandemic of teenager pregnancies, especially in certain countries that become more and more poor when people stop those teenagers from getting abortions because now they cannot study, they have to raise their children, and this creates lots of problems. And it's a huge coincidence that these people get desperate and they find hope in the church and they indoctrinate their children in this church. So the main institution that has been trying to ban abortion now wants to be part of people deciding to ban abortion? Guys, I'm totally shocked. For real. And obviously, I'm being extremely sarcastic. This started after the thing in Texas. Please, guys, go and read the articles. We have two very interesting articles. One was written by Rebecca Boone, and she talks about how the Catholic Church asked to intervene in Idaho abortion lawsuit. And this is terrible. And you just have to read how they introduce themselves. The Roman Catholic Diocese of Boise, which oversees of Idaho, they have filed a request to intervene in support of the abortion done as a friend of the court. And if you pay attention to the law, this is one of the most disgusting things ever. Please read the article, because the law would allow the potential father, grandparents, siblings, aunts, or even uncles of the embryo or fetus to sue an abortion provider for a minimum of $2,000 in damages within 4 years after the abortion. So this means a rapist cannot file a lawsuit under the law, but the rapist's relatives could, all of them, go and sue this mother who decides to get an abortion. And this makes me sick, guys. They are literally trying to just go and punish a woman who could have been raped and who wants to get an abortion. But no, the church says that lives are precious and all of that. Apparently, they are only precious if they are not real people, because children and, you know, women, they have no right, and they can be raped by either, okay, I don't want to say priest, on, you know, as I've said before. But these type of laws, they pretend to punish victims, and they want to stop abortion, which should be a basic right of people. And I think this is going to be, for me, this is totally disgusting.
I hear you. So, yeah, what is this, an amicus curiae or friend of the court brief that the diocese wants to offer up to as a friend of the court. So it's an individual or organization not party to the legal case, but has some type of merit or understanding of the overall concepts or in question, so as to help the legal process move forward in a more streamlined and professional manner. Some of the things that the Roman court, I think all of us, when I was looking through the notes, had picked up on the quote from lawyer for the Catholic Church, where they're talking about the quote, the diocese counseled and educated legislators regarding the same and provided support during the legislative process to proponents of the bill, the same being that bill. Open it up to the floor. What type of counsel do you think, Emma, the diocese has? What do they have to add for education on a medical matter?
For education on a medical matter, I mean, none. The thing is that I looked a little bit into the sort of history of who is usually a friend of the court, because it seems quite a strange sort of vague thing, but it tends to be advocacy groups, mostly legal-based advocacy groups, who specialize in, you know, supporting a certain area. And I just thought, I can't see the Catholic Church fitting that description remotely. And the only, you know, the only expertise or counsel they can possibly give has to be faith-based. And then interjecting faith into the case, isn't that, I mean, I'm not from the US, but doesn't that, it strikes me as sort of fundamentally unconstitutional. I don't know how it can be acceptable.
Yeah. Or how they counseled or educated legislatures on a bill. Where's the church state separation there?
Yeah.
What do you think, Cynthia? It looks like you're chomping.
I'm always chomping, Monty. Well, you know, back to this whole thing of the friend of the court and like suggesting or giving amicus briefs to actually weigh in on a subject matter. First off, we know that I think that we did a show a while ago where, you know, I brought up like abortion specifically not necessarily being a topic that the Catholic Church picked up on until much, 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 much later in their history. And it was not always something that was like pushed as a big sin or no-no. Matter of fact, there have been, I was actually watching a television show a while ago that featured a character from the 1400s where where in it, and this is not in my notes, so I'm completely winging this. So just let me fly. that there was Catholic officials that would seek out medical midwives that knew how to do abortion. And if for some reason one of the, I remember specifically, it was a nun who was raped by one of the priests in the convent. And they said that that she was actually intertwining with the devil. So this is what we're calling the priest now? Okay, I'm for it. But regardless, they actually sought the midwife that also knew how to do abortions to terminate the pregnancy so it would not implicate this particular priest who seemed to go around and go into different convents in that particular area to, I think it was like one of the leaders of that particular province over certain convents, churches, like a bishop or what have you. And they were like to going around and doing this and taking, and but, you know, also exacting their control, because rape is control and violence over another person. It's nothing like, you know, a sexual desire about it, that caused her to get pregnant and then, you know, terminate the pregnancy. So I just find it interesting that in the history of the Catholic Church, we see this particular practice, yet and still there is a cognitive dissonance of, oh, we're against abortion. I remember specifically in the article, the lawyer from that was representing the Diocese of Iowa, Idaho. I think it's Idaho or Iowa.
Idaho.
Thank you. Yes, I keep on potatoes. He's quoted. This is what he said. In the request to intervene, attorneys for the Catholic Church said the diocese has maintained a vested interest in the dignity and sanctity of all human life, including the life of the unborn. And I'm sorry, but Catholic dioceses around the world have actually demonstrated, as evidence would show, the exact opposite. Can we not forget holy war? Can we not forget accusations of women being witches and killed, the rapings of nuns, like I was mentioning before, and aborting the fetuses or putting them up for adoption, child rape, multiple centuries and covering it up, and also even Pope Nicholas V and the papal bulls that he actually put out that bless the transatlantic slave trade. I'm sorry. Oh, and let's not even forget the care of the of children, of indigenous children that were just left to be buried in Canada, that they just found massive thousands and thousands of graves that went to these particular Catholic schools. So I'm sorry, but we have actually seen the exact opposite of actually protecting or even showing or demonstrating any type of sanctity of life. And I think it's absolutely
true. Yeah, you're totally right.
What do you say, Teo? Did you have...
Only last week we were talking about the Bliss Report. And I think that this way of the church trying to control the laws that are passed is just one more step on the Bliss Report, this idea that they are turning the USA into a theocracy. Mm-hmm. And guys, it's scary. It's worrying. I'm seriously worried about you. And please, everybody, read the second article that we have. That one was written by Melissa Quinn. And that was about the Supreme Court and the possible ramifications. And I want to quote this because this shocked me from the article. It says, with the Texas law laws still in practice, legislators in Florida, Oklahoma, Alabama, Missouri, and Ohio have pledged to file or have introduced similar measures. The pursuit of legislation modeled after the Texas policy, coupled with the impending Supreme Court ruling, has raised the stakes for supporters of abortion rights. This means after Texas decided to put those laws that are going to punish people who want to get abortion and even help in abortions, and that all the USA apparently, or at least, you know, the Bible Belt at least, will try to follow the same ideas. And I know that in Texas, the Satanic Temple, they are trying to say that abortion is part of their religious rituals, but I think that is only a small help and that is not going to be, I don't think the whole population from the USA will say, oh no, I'm satanic, my ritual lets me have an abortion in order to get that. And once again, guys, for me, it's scary to see how the USA is slowly but sadly constantly turning into a theocracy more and more every day. It's scary, totally scary.
There's some fragmentation for sure. I see it being pulled in a couple of ways. As we do have, which will be coming up against in front of the U.S. Supreme Court here soon, Dobbs versus Jackson's Women Health Organization, and that's Georgia, where the Georgia State Senate tried to put in a law that saying that you cannot have an abortion after 15 weeks. And that was a lawsuit was put forth by Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood was found to be incorrect. It was appealed. That appeal found that Planned Parenthood was correct, that it was unconstitutional. It was appealed again. And again, I think it went to the Fifth District Court and was found for Planned Parenthood. And now the state has appealed again, and it has gone to the Supreme Court. So, but we do have some other things going on, which I think are should be stated, that there is work being done by Democratic governors and those state bodies that are putting laws that are protecting women's reproductive health, such as Michigan. The governor there is suing 13 counties, the 13 counties that actually provide women's health services, because there's an old pre-Roe versus Wade law on the books that would come into effect if Roe versus Wade was overturned. So she is preemptively suing those counties to prevent that from happening if what happens, depending on what happens, you know, at the Supreme Court. We have Florida. We've got other places around here. I found some hope in that the West Coast has all improved women's reproductive health. They've made it enshrined in the state constitutions in some cases that this is a right. I thought it was interesting, Emma, how you took it a little bit different. You went at the biblical tact on this.
Well, I think you should. I think if you're going to bring a faith-based argument into the discussion, I think you need to go biblical, because that's, you know, I know it's the Catholic Church and they have their dogma, but I thought it was interesting because the Bible doesn't ever mention abortion by name, but it does discuss the, you know, the legal ramifications and the punishments for hurting. If you hurt a woman who is with child, then it's Old Testament, so it's eye for an eye, life for a life. But if they lose the fetus, then it's like a fine. So I thought it's interesting that the only sort of times that it's really mentioned, they're not really, the unborn fetus isn't really considered a living human. So like Cynthia was talking about before, it's not been a long-standing issue. Abortion hasn't been an issue forever. It's not something that really is biblical. It's like the hot button issue of the moment that, I don't know, gets people invested or stirred up. And I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think we've talked about the Catholic Church for quite enough time. Teo, do you have any final words about this subject?
Oh, yeah. Emma is mentioning the Bible, but the Bible does mention a way how you can make an abortion. If a man believes that the woman has been cheating on him, there is a ritual where God decides if she has been unfaithful or not. And a part of her body, in Spanish, is el muslo. I don't know what is in English because I didn't read it, but it says that they are going to have, that she is never going to be able to have babies again. And obviously, I don't remember if she's expelled from the country, or the land, if she's guilty. But if the guy if she was actually innocent, nothing bad happens to the guy. You know, he has to apologize and that's it. So yeah, the Catholic Church and religion in general, they don't worry about human rights. They just want to control people. And I see in what the Catholic Church is doing here, I only see another way of the Catholic Church of controlling, taking control and deciding what people can or cannot do over their body. They burned as many women as they wanted in the past. Now they want to force them to be incubators and not real people. And that's it. That's what the Catholic Church wants from my perspective and point of view.
Yeah, understood. Cynthia?
Yeah, and just to piggyback on what Teo said, if we remember the story of David and Bathsheba and how he wanted her and put her husband on the front line during a war so that he can die and then he can take her as his wife. Remember, God killed their first child. He basically aborted it because he said that the way that your reunion came about was not sanctioned by me, and therefore, you know, it was curtains for your baby. So if I would interpret it a certain way, it seems that there was actual demonstration for the Bible being more so for getting rid of a fetus if it did not fit the bill that it was supposed to fit rather than a game.
All right. Thank you very much. And last words, Emma?
I think that's about it for me. I just would, okay. Yeah, I would agree with Cynthia and say that the Bible, interestingly, God is responsible for as many abortions as killing of living infants. And it almost, if you take it at face value as a collective, it's almost equal way, equal destruction in the eyes of God. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So we'll move on. Thank you very much, everybody. And to you out there in YouTube land, thank you very much, both our veteran viewers, for getting us up to, where are we at, 10.8 subscribers, 1,000 subscribers now. So we'd love to get to 11,000. So if you are watching and you have not subscribed yet, please click that like button and subscribe, and let us ring the bell so you will be notified when new episodes are put out. Premiere is the word I'm looking for. It's every Sunday, by the way, 3 p.m. Central. But I think you guys knew that. So when you have done that, share that link to your channel of your friends, your family, your coworkers, the neighbor, mailman, mailwoman, whomever, who you like, who you don't like. We do want to get the word out there so we can continue to raise our the awareness of the channel, and so we continue to provide some fundraising for the atheist community of Austin. So that being said, I want to let you know that the atheist community of Austin has another YouTube channel. This is the Atheist Experience Network, a channel where you can find all the ACA shows in podcast form. So you can subscribe to that at tiny.cc/AENpodcasts to listen to the episodes of the Nonprofits, the Atheist Experience, Sexular Sexuality, and all of our other ACA shows. Please don't miss a single episode. Thank you very much. And so moving on to segment two, Cynthia, will you please tell us about Oak Park and the pastor there? What does he want to do?
Yes, in Oak Park, where is actually in my neck of the woods, which is a suburb of Chicago, there is a certain pastor that has suggested that Lent should be a time to fast from whiteness. This particular article comes from the Chicago Sun-Times, and I believe that it was written by a person that I'm going to tell you who it is momentarily, but that's okay. Just read the damn article. Anyway, so just about this whole thing, Pastor John Egerton of the First United Church of Oak Park had a sign above his church that was put up during Lent saying fasting from whiteness. And he actually said that he took the sign, or they had like the church people take the sign down during the nighttime so that it doesn't invite mischief. So what Pastor Egerton and his 650 congregants that are mostly white, what are they up to? Well, during the fasting, 40 days and 40 nights, and, you know, Jesus was fasting in the wild, and so they decided to follow suit. They removed all music written by white composers from their services in favor of those who were written by African Americans or non-white musicians from around the globe, saying it is part of the church's broader anti-racist mission. This is a quote specifically from Pastor Egerton. Now, he has received some backlash for the sign. He received vulgar emails, criticisms on the internet, and has referred to the sign as wokeness gone mad. Oh boy, you know, I just say that every time that I hear like wokeness gone mad or wokeness here, wokeness there, I just get completely triggered and just completely think about PragerU. I digress. Or reverse racism, which is not a thing. Just want to put that out there. But anywho. So also there was another quote from Pastor Cory Booker, who is a Black pastor from the South Side of Chicago, that described Egerton's Lent message as the worst kind of moral preening and nothing but hot air. And one of the things that he said, which I found was extremely interesting, was that the Bible is about one thing only, the word. It's not about who is Black, who is white, or red. That's why faith in Jesus Christ unites so many people. Yeah. And that's why it's been such a blessing to so many people. And he actually said that in an email to the Chicago Times. And the only pushback actually that Pastor Egerton got from his congregants is that the message or what they're trying to do is actually not bold enough. But he did say that he has gotten support from the community and other surrounding areas. He said that he received a bouquet of flowers and even a giant plate of cookies have arrived from local supporters to say, great job, Pastor Egerton. You keep that fasting from whiteness up. And on that particular note, I'm going to go ahead and open it up to the panel and let you guys discuss about fasting from whiteness.
Oh, what kind of cookies? Style. What kind of cookies were those?
That is a good question. I don't think that the Sun-Times actually said, but you know, I think that that warrants a deep dive. Was it chocolate chip? Was it snickerdoodle? Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Oh my goodness. Emma, what do you think of what was his name? Pastor
Egerton.
Egerton?
Egerton.
Well, I think it's fair to say I'm probably the whitest person here, possibly on the planet by my face right now. It's very, I understand the complaints that it's a little bit, what did the guy say, preening, because it feels, reading the article, it feels very, you know, I don't know, it feels very like local, middle class, nice folks at church, just, oh, that'll be nice, we'll have a sign and we'll listen to some different music. But I think genuinely looking into the history of Oak Park, and the church and kind of what it's for, it looks like, to me, I felt kind of like this is in keeping with its general broader mission. Maybe not mission, because it's not very active. I feel like it's more attempting to be like an open space for people to come into. You know what I mean? I'm not explaining myself very well. It's more like it creates opportunities for people to be there. So they have had female pastors for a long time, longer than most churches. They were officially, whatever the act is, open and affirming from, I think, 95, which means that they're officially welcoming and accepting and understanding of LGBT plus people. And it kind of, yeah, it feels like they're making changes by providing opportunities and welcoming all people. I saw they have quite a lot of women's events and stuff like that. So I kind of believe in the heart of the idea, you know, and my selfish part is just like, yes, let's reduce the amount of dreary composers that we usually hear in church and actually listen to something different. So I kind of disagree with the idea that it's some kind of posturing. I think the thing that made me laugh the most about it is the idea of it being some kind of reverse racism, because not only is reverse racism not a thing, but if it was a thing and they were trying to imply some kind of hate, like listening to music by non-white composers for a month is like so far from what that would be. Yeah, the backlash kind of amazed me.
Indeed.
I think we're all going to talk about this idea of reverse racism. I just want to say, guys, if it's not reverse racism. Racism is being discriminated and it has other implications. And you're not being discriminated. Nobody's saying, hey, you cannot come to the church because you're white. If they did discriminate you because you're white, that would be not reverse racism. That would be just plain racism. So stop trying to play this silly card. Or reverse racism is not a thing. It's not a thing. If somebody tells you cannot do this because you're white, that would be racism. That's it, people. And I got to admit, when I started reading the article, I read fasting for witnesses. And I was like, okay, so you are a witness. You have to go to court and now you have to fast. What is wrong with the USA? Then I had a good laugh when I realized, oh, fasting from witnesses. And I was like, okay, how can you fast from witnesses? I mean, what counts as witnesses? And as Cynthia explained, oh, they are just not listening to good music. I mean, not even good music, to specific music, because there is still good music out there that is not classical music. And I want to quote the guy because he said, you don't fast from things that are despicable. You don't fast from things that are ugly, he said. I'm quoting the article. You fast from those things that do tug at your heart. So, did I mispronounce that? I'm sure I did. So the things that make your heart beat, I guess that is what he's trying to imply. So of course, he enjoys these things. He enjoys this music made by white people, but he's going to fast from it as Jesus did from, you know, food and stuff like that. Or Moses for 40 days and he didn't die out of starvation. So we have this idea of not having things that you like. And that's it. There is no racism, no discrimination, no nothing. I am still confused about... I'm not confused. I know that there is a specific group of people who enjoy being the center of attention. Why are you looking at me like that? And those people who pretend that anything that says, okay, white could be a problem under blah, 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 they feel attacked immediately. I know I shouldn't quote memes as much, but come on, the Karen stereotype exists for a reason, and I'm sorry to every woman called Karen out there, but that's the meme I know of. And the okay boomer, you know, it's another thing that seems to be like in the white spectre of skin, apparently. And I don't know. Reading this, I could only... there is a meme that I love. When you see this guy who is a hairdresser who is reading a magazine called White People, and he's very confused. He's an Afro-American person. And I've seen the meme with a lot of stuff that only, quotation mark, white people can do. And look for that meme, search for it, look at everything that seems to be extremely white, and I'm pretty sure you will agree with this priest, with this pastor, that maybe, just maybe, it's a good thing to rest from whiteness once in a while, especially in the mean? USA where...
What does that mean? Yeah.
I mean, it is, and also, I'm looking at his... the Pastor Egerton's statement on, you know, how he likes Bach and he likes Mozart, and those are the composers that they are going to be fasting from. I don't see this as in any way a trial or a giving up of things. I feel like it's going to give a sense of already entitled people, you know, but I got a black friend.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does. I mean, like, no, you're right. This look, you know, when I think of what whiteness is, it has far less to do with skin color, and it has more to do with policy and social implications within an environment. And it's kind of laughable to me when I was reading this article that I guess that the pastor thought that you know, just not playing white composers that died hundreds of years ago was like a way for you to contribute to making sure that whiteness was less of a thing. If I were to be consulted about, gee, Cynthia, how does one fast from whiteness? It is being actively involved with overarching oppressive policies that actually cause issues in one's environment. I mean, just not that long ago, there was an expose, I believe that it was done by ABC, about an Oak Park school that actually was going over specifically how racism affects their school in of itself, how kids happen to separate themselves, they segregate themselves, and even how like Oak Park in of itself, like that entire area, it is very segregated. You know, Oak Park happens to be more white than anything, and there is like a dividing line between Oak Park and the west side of Chicago, which is Austin, and towards the east of that line, towards the east of that line is West Chicago, west side of Chicago, which happens to be predominantly Black and very poor. And then you have to the east of the Austin line is Oak Park, where you have predominantly white people who live in beautiful homes. So my takeaway from this is like, if we're really going to have a proper conversation about fasting from whiteness, you can start in your own backyard. You know, you can definitely look at the segregation in your community and how it actually favors a certain group of people versus another, and actually bring about change in that particular way. But, you know, just not playing Bach or Mozart for a little over a month is not it. I'm sorry.
Oh, not well, sorry. You know, you have a church full of white people, so the biggest sacrifice that they want to do is stop listening to some classical music. I don't know. I don't want to. Okay, let me have some fun with white people for a while in here, because I was explaining something when that white gentleman over there, Mr. Multi, interrupted me so rudely, I have to say. It's because you're white, right, Multi? No, I'm just joking. But by a huge coincidence, when I was reading this article, I got to something that Cynthia is going to be here with me. Have you heard about Ron DeSantis? He said that math is too racist against white people, apparently.
Wow.
Because apparently learning math takes you to critical race theory, and this apparently is going to be CTR is racist against white people. This guy is a senator from Florida. It had to be Florida.
Yeah.
So, Cynthia, do you think that this deserves an unisonous fuck you, Florida? I don't know.
What the fuck, Florida? That's mostly what it is. Yeah, right there.
What the heck, Florida?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, once again, it's like these guys, they want to feel oppressed. It makes me feel like, we were just talking about the Catholic Church. Have you heard those Christians who believe that whenever you say, hey, you are not allowed to discriminate other people, oh no, they are attacking my religious beliefs and all of that? Once I read somebody complaining about Nazis and how they shouldn't have free speech, and somebody tried to say, oh, why are you attacking my religious ideas? And it's all like, dude, this is not about religion. Or why do you think that anything that stops discrimination immediately is related to your religion? So it's like that. The idea that they have to feel oppressed because they have no idea what oppression is. And oh yeah, suddenly somebody is using an idea to not to listen to classical music. Obviously, they are attacking in my whiteness or whatever. So, you know, this center of the world kind of syndrome.
Emma, what is it like in over where across the pond? What are the United Methodists like over there? Would you see anything like this? I mean, it was this completely
no,
wow.
But again, I'm going to be at the forefront of this as the whitest of people, but our race issues here are very different. It doesn't tend to be so much of a black and white. We have, I think the most persecution is probably against people from Eastern Europe and things like that. So it's a slightly different kind of environment, but I don't, maybe I'm just not keeping up with the local churches enough, but I don't know that anyone's ever attempted to fast from whiteness or anything like that here. Not that I've seen.
All right. Well, I guess we can all take a fast from this conversation for a moment. So we can let you guys know that if you didn't tune into all the other ACA shows last week, we've got a little roll here so you can see what you missed.
Not because you're married or that you're in a long-term relationship that now suddenly all the effort goes out the door. Don't take your partner for granted. Put the effort in. Start seeing them. Start putting them in focus again.
I don't know the methodologies of which you speak of that we determine, oh, well, God is real because we feel it in our hearts. That doesn't seem like a very verifiable methodology to me. It just kind
of
feels
like most of my thinking with my brain, you know, and not my heart.
Isn't it the strangest thing that she talked to Jesus in the closet? Was she locked in there? Was there enough room for both of them? I have so many
lots of questions.
Lots
coming out.
Clearly, if you don't have the prerequisite knowledge in physics and you're going to use quantum physics to substantiate your claim, right? Do you not see the issue in that, right? Like, this thing proves like the most important question in the world, yet you've like not even picked up a physics book.
If we can completely change a person just by changing the structure of this lump of jelly right here, what could you possibly point to that goes beyond the actual physical thing that we see that does everything you're claiming?
And we're back. All right. So our third section, we are going to be talking about some multi-level marketing. Emma, this is kind of right in your wheelhouse. So please, could you lead us in on this article from Will Anderson?
Sure. Yeah, I got a little bit excited when I saw this. I don't know why. I just I like talking about multi-level marketing. I feel like it's a winning fight, which is part of what we're going to talk about. So yeah, this is an article from January this year by Will Anderson. It's on the Gospel Coalition, and it's basically a sort of warning message for Christians about multi-level marketing being spread in churches. Or spread among church communities, which is such a huge problem. This is where the phrase Mormons losing money comes from, because certain religious groups, and Utah is like a hotbed of multi-level marketing activity. So it's just going over the different personal things that Will Anderson has been preached at. And part of what I thought was interesting, and we've got another article as well on Pathos by Captain Cassidy from 2021. And what I thought was so interesting about both of them is the aspect that they're both missing, because they come from this perspective of what people are discussing when they're trying to preach the MLMs to you as a couple or like as a man. And both of them talk about, well, the Pathos one particularly talks about what it is in religions, especially Christianity, that lines up with the multi-level marketing and why that is so common. But neither of them talk about the fact that it's mostly women who are targeted, or how that lines up with Christian beliefs. And I thought that was so interesting that they both sort of missed that out. And I wonder if it's especially on TGC, if it's to sort of avoid almost a critical critical angle on church teachings, because to kind of summarize, they MLMs tend to target mothers, stay-at-home wives quite a lot, people who are at home and feel they want to either contribute financially or they want a community. Multi-level marketing comes in and offers all of these promises of both of those things. And that just fits in with Christian wives particularly so well, because most of those communities are usually preaching that women should be staying at home. There's a huge amount of manipulation regarding seeing your children grow up, and being a good mother is being at home with the children. And so this company will allow you to do that. And that's such a huge part of it in all of the research I've done. I just thought it was wild that neither of these mentioned the women in the home aspect at all. So yeah, I don't know if you guys want to jump in.
Yeah,
I would
Oh. Yeah, Teo, what do you have to say?
Oh, I wanted to go with a personal anecdote because there is a guy who helped me with some episodes and he has joined several Christian groups, amongst them WhatsApp groups. I don't have WhatsApp, he has. And he told me that as soon as he joined some of the Christian groups, immediately his private message got flooded with these type of scams where they were trying to offer him this, hey, get rich by selling and doing nothing, blah, blah, blah. And we were talking about that. He was like, okay, why do you think that this is? We were talking in a group. We believe, and we may be totally wrong, but maybe, as Emma was explaining, the way how churches tend to work, that you have stay-at-home wives, you have this idea of trusting people from your community, that is going to create very good targets for these scams, especially when you are a Christian and somebody else says, hey, Christian brother, I'm part of your church. I would never do something bad against you. And also, I don't know, this might be biased, but we think that we as atheists tend to be more critical about stuff. We tend not to believe stuff immediately. Apply some critical thinking to anything that is offered to us or that is explained to us. And Christians, they are taught the opposite. They should just believe because the pastor is saying it. They should just be good because the pastor says that they should be good. Please, people, everybody be good just because. But they tend not to analyze things that much, or that was our conclusion after this anecdote of this friend receiving so many messages of people who believe he was a Christian, so they were trying to scam him with this MLM thing.
Hmm.
So, later I will say more stuff, but that was a personal thing that I feel connected very well with what Emma was saying.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I guess, like add a bit of anecdote myself during my non-denom days. I remember being pitched several multi-level marketings. Like, you know, it seemed like that some cases the pastor would allow certain groups or people who were involved with certain multi-level marketing organization say their spiel to the congregants, who happens to mostly be women, about how they can either create a separate stream of income or even replace their income and get it better, and make it better rather, and then also use the priming portion of God would want you to be more free to do his bidding. And if you happen to be involved with said business, which is in some cases completely 100% Christian owned and ran, that you could do this and be able to be blessed in the city, be blessed in the fields, be blessed when you come and when you go. That was the pitch often given in the pews. And also people would, you know, even come up to you and say, hi, I'm part of this particular organization. Matter of fact, I think that one of the more popular ones, I know that like Mary Kay is a very popular one, you know, selling makeup, but I remember, I believe that they're bankrupt now, but Herbalife was extremely popular, and just about almost any church that I either visited or even the one that I was in, somebody was selling Herbalife. And but it was less about the product. Matter of fact, I even found a Patheos article called Why Evangelical Christians Love Multi-Level Marketing So Much. Link will be in the description below, people. But one of the things that they said, that it's never about the product itself. It's always about bringing in a steady flow of new people to keep the enterprise in motion. And in the end, it's the people themselves who are the product. And the more you bring in, the more there will be more to bring in, and who can then bring in still more, and so on. It almost reminds me of the divine commission to go out into the world and to preach the gospel and compel more to come in. It seems like the same type of ideology is also being applied when we're talking about multi-level marketing. But yeah, and I guess this is one of the the hooking points that will actually bring people in as well.
Yeah, one of the things that we were talking about before we went to tape was the term downlining. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, I that was something that I didn't know quite about. I knew it was a pyramid scheme, but like you're saying, Cynthia, that it's just bringing more people to bring more people to bring more people to, you know, just underneath you. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, that's right. And generally in these companies, almost always, especially in the bigger Christian owned and run companies, people are paying, you know, upwards of $200 to join. So yeah, that's where you're getting the money from, less actually having outside customers. So each salesperson that joins is a, you know, $200 or whatever customer. And that's where you get a lot of the money from as well.
Okay. So if these were just, say, one step downline from me, I would take that 200, I would take a portion of it and move the rest of them to those that are above me. Is that correct?
You would get a tiny, tiny little commission, depending on the company. You'd get, you know, like 12% or something.
But Emma, I do apologize for interjecting, but I was just thinking about something that in some of these multi-level marketing organizations, they're, even though that there may be a product associated with it, most people prefer to do the downlining, because the more people that they get under them, the more people, the more that it moves them up on the pyramid chain, and they're getting more commission from them bringing in people, the people bringing in people, the people that bringing in the people that's bringing in the people that's bringing in the people. And instead of just like actually selling like the shake or the vitamin or the, or the whatever that they're selling.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the selling a shake or a mascara for, you know, 10 to 25% commission is a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of revenue, especially with all your outgoing costs. The only way to make money with a company selling really low cost products is to have a big downline. And once your downline gets, and it's, you know, 1% of all of the distributors that get to that level, but once it gets big enough, you stop having to do, you know, quote unquote, the work, because essentially all of your downlines are doing the work and they're trying to build their downlines. So you're getting more and more, and you just basically, that's the point where you watch the paychecks roll in. But that's, you know, the thing that's always interesting to me, and this is kind of an aside from the specifics of the article now, but I think it's always worth commenting on. Almost always the people in that top 1% who are like the real aspirational people that everyone desperately wants to be at that level, they're usually making about an average salary. It's they're not like millionaires. They're generally making like just below, or, you know, the average salary for like the US. It's just not, it's not lucrative. But yeah, like you say, the there was a it's super old now, but there's a documentary called Betting on Zero, from when, I've forgotten his name, but a stock market whiz was trying to short sell Herbalife. And this was before they went to court, and they had to change all their rules and stuff to make it less pyramid schemey. But a huge amount of the time, that I like that documentary because I spend a lot of time with the victims, and it's essentially the biggest community of victims that's affected is this church group, this church community, and it's like torn this this church community apart, because like Taya was saying earlier, it's. It really hits a lot of the points that you have in your church life. And I think, especially if you talk about Mormons and how it's interesting how many Mormons are in multi-level marketing, they've got the door knocking skills down to a T. You know, they've got no inhibitions or learning even when it comes to cold messaging people, reaching out to people fresh to try and share something, or is the kind way of putting it, because that's built into their church life. So these companies do just fit like right in. But they are shrinking. The multi-level marketing is dying out. I think based on what I can tell, it's still, the church groups is probably still the biggest, at least definitely in the US, but I think it's bigger in the US than anywhere else anyway. But the church groups are still the biggest like proponents of the multi-level marketing.
I don't know. I keep seeing those groups in here Let me go with a second personal anecdote, and then I want to mention something from the article. Once I was walking on the street, I was out of work, and I had some free extra time, and there was somebody asking, you know, typical surveys, and I decided, okay, I have done that awful job, I will help this person, and I will answer the stupid survey. And this person started asking about my personal information, you know, name and general stuff, and suddenly it was a girl, she asks, do you know about Herbalife? And I answer, oh yeah, that is an American pyramidal scheme. And her face got very red and she got very angry. And what is it, a pyramid scheme? Oh, well, you know, you have to buy that stuff, so you're giving your money to the person who is selling you. Oh, but did they force you to buy it? And I have the idea that maybe she was trying to sell me Herbalife. But I have no idea, because then she got very angry and left. But that's my personal general idea. So apparently they don't like when you tell them that they are being scammed and that they are trying to become scammers. But I guess that has more to do with, you know, personal feelings. No, this is not a scam. I'm not being scammed. I'm doing awesome job and I'm going to be rich one day. Okay. And now let's go back to I have to go back with this. But my point is, in here, I still see those things and people still believe that. And maybe that has a lot to do with evangelical churches increasing in numbers. I have no idea. So when I read the article, sorry, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to also say, and this is probably why you're experiencing this tale where you were. Like most of these people who are actually getting into multi-level marketing has pitched these particular schemes are also part of I've noticed a fairly poorer population of folks. In order for them to be given like some type of hope, in order for them to work this particular pyramid, get your downline together, and then they're going to be rewarded handsomely with money to get them out of their particular situation. It's almost reminds me of how in communities that happen to be of less affluence and or affluence rather, and also who are under-resourced, are overly populated with churches. So it's kind of like this this particular edict is also followed with this whole, okay, we're going to give you Jesus plus a way out of your situation so that you're no longer poor. See, God's blessing. There you go. Yay.
Yeah. Bria, going back to the article for a little bit, the first one I read, you know, with by the one with Will Anderson, I always had to go back and keep in mind the audience that he was writing for, this is a religious publication. Trigger warning, or reader warning, I should say. This one, when I start reading his articles and his he's got these five points that he wants to let people know about. These are things that multi-level marketers might write to use to entice you into it, and what the problems were with an MLM person trying to sell you using these tools. And I'm reading some of the things that he's writing here, and he has a very misogynistic view of the world, you could say.
No, not at all.
Let's just forget that I went to their website and I looked at all of how they're set up there at this this, what was it, Sutherland Church. That's where he's a resident, a church planting resident of Sutherland's church. So that's another thing. So it's like they don't want you to become a part of the MLM because they need your money so they can make more of the Sutherland churches, which there are four of them now, all in California. But I mean, like I said, we're saying, like when he was talking about love the family well, when he's talking about the you can go out and if you can make more money, then you don't have to work as long. What does it says? Providing you could turn me into that kind of man. You know, the problem we have is we would have no teachers, no bank tellers, no grocery workers or construction workers. I'm sorry, but three out of those four are at least 50% staffed by women, if not more, as far as I know. when I go into the grocery store or a bank the bank teller and teachers, yes, the man seems to be a little bit out of touch, just say. And I think when on his last one, where he's talking about recruiting builds relationships, that really to me spoke of his fear that what this is going to do is going to take money, is going to take the people that he needs to be in his community that he's trying to build away. And that's what he was talking about, a lot of this. Did either any of you get that same feeling from this article?
Yeah, you actually took what I was going to say, because I was going to mention the same 5 points. And I was going to mention that this reminded me a lot, the way how it's written, if you go and read it, guys, this is exactly how Jehovah's Witnesses write when they try to explain the stuff to you in the Watchtower or Young People mm-hmm. Ask. Exactly the same, you know, they try to sound profound and they mention some specific Bible versicles. So it reminded me a lot of that. And I was going to go with a similar route to you, Malty, talking about how, yeah, they are also afraid that they are going to take the money that belongs to the church into this other scam. So I was also going to go with the 5 points and a kind of a specific extra, extra warning. Yeah, I think it was like that.
I was going to call it a deepity, the way that he was trying to explain it. But like the whole portion of the misogynistic aspect of writing it, not to mention, like you said, Malty, that the occupations that he mentioned mostly were at least about half occupied by women, or even how, like Emma, you mentioned how multi-level marketing has a tendency to target more women. So I don't know. Like, I think that one of the things I noticed, and I'm not saying that this is like every Christian or every theistic person, but what I noticed mostly in monotheism is an overarching idea of patriarchy, and also that idea being passed on to said members of such religion idea. So one of the things that if they're going to start to do any type of commentary about something that they happen to see, it's always going to come from more of a, how does this infringe on my male point of view, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yep. Thank you. Yeah, he does.
So I did like, go ahead, Teo.
Go, Malty. No, I wasn't going to say I'm happy that it's going in decline, but I will let you go.
So. Yeah. In decline, I was just going to bring up that second article by Captain Cassidy, and I'm looking at this Venn diagram that they have in their article, and just the number of overlapping statements that they're talking about, and I can just see how well those two, how easy it would be to feel like these things are true, because from a different perspective, this is something that you're bombarded with in the Christian faith quite a bit. When you were saying that multi-level marketing is in decline, I saw what Captain Cassidy had said in their article. You've seen other things that support that this is something that's hopefully on its way out?
Yeah. I mean, most of my experience and information has come from outside of the US, so I don't know if it's slightly different. But I think partly this is why I was kind of referring to it as like a victory or a winning battle. Partly, I think the kind of media and pop culture reaction has turned more strongly negative, and that's becoming more mainstream. And it's really making it harder for people to spread multi-level marketing and to be active, because risk to relationship is such a huge part of it anyway. But if you say, oh, have you heard of such and such, and almost everyone you ask says, oh, the scam or pyramid scheme, you're going to get turned off pretty quickly. So it's I don't have any statistics on me, but it's definitely declining, and there have been some satisfying legal victories. Still pretty huge, and there was a fresh serve thanks to the pandemic a fresh serving of, new companies as well as more people reaching out, which is unfortunate. But that's starting to die down again. So I think we can probably say that this is going in the right direction and feel hopeful about that.
Could it be a step in the right direction?
Yeah.
We definitely need to get that on a soundbite.
Indeed.
Tune back next time when Cynthia says,
step in the right direction,
So speaking of steps in the right direction, one thing that we have been doing, trying to do a step in the right direction, is we have expanded and got a brand new merch store. So you can visit our merch store at tiny.cc/merchaca to get your favorite items like t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs. You can also check out our new items like beanies, phone cases, and tote bags. There is going to be a special limited edition item each month from each one of the shows. So be sure to check out our store for nonprofit merch and merch from all of the other shows. So that being said, I think I will take us into our... Oh, yeah. Nice. Very nice. So I'll take us into our final episode, our final segment, which is about our friend, Ali Alexander, and his last appearance this last week on InfoWars, where he is saying that he will cooperate and then he won't cooperate with the Department of Justice about their looking into the the January 6th insurrection. So this comes from Right Wing Watch. It was, again, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to pull a Cynthia and say I have to get back to you on the author's name. I apologize, but I will have that for you in just a second. So anyway, Mr. Alexander, we have talked about him a few times, if you remember. He is the coordinator for the Stop the Steal rally group. You'll have people like Alex Jones and the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and even Greg Locke has been on the stage for him. He's has advocated for violence and civil war on multiple times, and he even led a chant of victory or death on the eve of the insurrection. Wonderful person. That being said, I don't know, guys. What do you think about Ali Alexander and Alex Jones getting together? These guys I want it to be done.
Suffer, Marty.
suffer like all of us. I don't know. Ali and Alex Jones gilded together like eggs and bacon, like, you know, full of cholesterol and might give you a heart attack. That's just kind of how I see them. Like, they're both on the same side of the coin in different look when it comes to, you know, the wide crazy conspiracy theories that they wield. The article by, and I'm going to help you out, even though I forgot my segment, was by Kristen Doerer. I do apologize if I messed up your name, Kristen. But, you know, she was mentioning specifically about, like, you know, how, you know, Ali and Alex were on on InfoWars, and how they were talking about, you know, the January 6th hearings, and how I believe that Alex Jones was subpoenaed, and also, of course, Ali Alexander. And I'm not going to go ad hominem, even though I want to so bad, but I won't. But how, like, first, like, you know, he said, like you mentioned, he said that he was going to cooperate, and then he said he wasn't going to cooperate, but basically just spent his time, or what he allegedly said is that he spent his time just basically spewing conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory. And then Alex Jones said that, you know, the reason why you went is because, and you said the things that you said, you're actually a hero Ali, Alexander, you are a hero to the American people.
Agreed.
As you should, Tao. Matter of fact, why don't you just go ahead and pick it up?
Before I say what I want to say, Emma, did you know about Ali Alexander before now?
Yes. Unfortunately, yes.
Then I can say I am the luckiest guy because I had no idea who the heck Ali Alexander was until I had to read this. Emma, we both are out of the USA, but I was luckier than you because this information reached to me only now. So I very innocently went to this article like, okay, let's see who this interesting guy is. Until I read the second paragraph, and this gave me all the information that I needed. And let me quote, joining radical conspiracy theorist Alex Jones on InfoWars Monday night, Alexander claimed that the effort to investigate and prosecute those responsible for the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol was a conspiracy to, quotation marks, stop Trump from running in 2024 and usher in a world order.
A new world order. A new,
oh, yeah, new world order. A new world order. It's the whole conspiracy. It's like, come on, guys. What is wrong with these MAGA losers who can't accept that people just dislike Donald Trump? There is no huge conspiracy against your new Jesus who beats this and this total extreme opposite of what a good Christian should be. And yeah, they believe that Trump is going to be president again in 2024. People in the USA, please wake up. Don't let more Ali Alexanders keep saying that, no, Trump is the new chosen one and they are only making stories up. Come on, people. You saw it on the internet. You saw it on TV. You were there. Don't say that.
Don't say wake up sheeple. I just need you not to say that.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm trying to understand this three-part track that we are on to stop Trump from running because they want to stop the Republican Party. They don't want Christians. They want to implode us, and they want to install a new world order. I don't understand how that's a three-part track, but
that's because, Malty, you're a sheeple and you're not within the realm, so you're not going to get it. You see how that works?
Mm-hmm. Do you learn to use critical thinking, Malty?
No, you can't.
I try, but it makes my brain hurt.
I'm curious to what Emma has to say about all of this.
Well, I had an interesting time reading the article because, full disclosure, as a young teen, I was an Alex Jones listening conspiracy theorist. Thanks to a not very well family member. So I like the whole thing is just because it's mostly Alex Jones talking about the New World Order. I felt like I was like transported back in time to being like 12 because it's the same talking points that he's had for 20 years. They've always been just about to usher in the New World Order, and it's never happened thus far. It's exhausting. I will say, just to kind of bring a sort of like lighter counterpoint to what Tao said, the good news is that with the like extreme evangelical Trump supporter base has kind of split in half and fragmented off ever since. I think the real tipping point was he advocated for vaccines finally. And so there was like a split where some of the conspiracy theorists had to decide between Trump is the new prophet leading us into, you know, whatever glorious future, or vaccines are the devil. And a lot of people went with vaccines are the devil. So at least they have fragmented and fractured quite a lot. But yeah, I mean, we were just the other day I was looking at there's this convention coming up. It's called like Patriots. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. It's called like Patriots United or something. But there's loads of like GOP associated people there, and conspiracy theorists. And it's like this exact same merging of crazy religious patriotic conspiracy stuff that is just like, it's upsettingly popular at the moment. And like Ali Alexander is just one in a massive line of them. And I just I just think that at the point where Alex Jones calls you a hero, you should just bin it all, bin everything, because it's over. Everything's over.
Well, Alex has been, InfoWars has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy as of this week due to being found guilty of all kinds of misinformation about Sandy Hook and the tragedy that occurred there. I'm hoping that can put a muzzle on this guy after all, but I don't know. Yeah, you don't think so, Cynthia?
Nah. He's been sued for Sandy Hook, right? He has been taken off of different platforms because of the very problematic things that he has said over the years. Yet he still keeps finding a home somewhere, saying the same type of bullshit that he's been saying, as you mentioned, Emma, for the past 20-something odd years. So I want to be hopeful to the point where, you know, somebody can just say, muzzle it, Mr. Jones. But I don't know. I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah. So, Teo, do you have any last words on this section or the actual? Let's go ahead and just do our final wrap up, because we're coming to the end of our time that we have.
Okay, then really quickly, for some reason I don't believe much about the ideas that John says that you guys plan to turn the USA into a one-state party like Venezuela with a ceremonial opposition party and become dictators. So, and with Ali Alexander supporting that and saying that they are preparing a false flag to demonize America and all the other things that I'm not going to mention due to time, I don't think that those people are very trustable, and I really hope that they are not very popular over there. I hope, because once again, as I have been telling you the last weeks in here, guys, the USA is worrying me a lot, quite a lot, I have to say.
All right. And Emma, thank you so much for joining us again on your first, and hopefully not your last, time on the Nonprofits. Do you have any final thoughts about this article or anything that we've discussed today?
No, just that thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful. But I think we should remember the little rays of hope, because it is stressful, and I worry about you guys too. But we got, you know, InfoWars is filing for bankruptcy. We got MLMs are shrinking. Everything's looking up. It's going to be okay. Probably. Hopefully.
We have a merch store.
I'm going to need to get a mug or a hat. I think I'm going to get a hat.
A beanie? You're going to get a beanie?
That would be good. So thank you all. And to you out there, please think about joining our fan-run social media outlets. You can find most of the Nonprofits hosts on the Atheist Community of Discord. You can do that by going to tiny.cc/ACD Discord. You can also find us on Facebook at tiny.cc/FBNP. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at tiny.cc/PatreonNP. And if you do find yourself already shopping at Amazon, you can support the Atheist Community of Austin by shopping at Amazon Smile at smile.amazon.com and selecting the Atheist Community of Austin as your beneficiary. So please be sure to use the link to help out the ACA there when you're shopping for all of your prime goods. We value your feedback, so please tell us what you like, what you don't like, concerns, or if you have any articles that you think would be good for us to cover. You can do that at nonprofits@atheist-community.org. And I just want to say thank you all for being with me on this panel. And thank you out there for watching or listening. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytth and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.